are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You are with Patricia Traina, and joining me again is special guest Chris Bisignano of the Giant Insider, and he is helping me break down the New York Giants positions from 2018 through previewing 2019 as well. So, Chris, we're rolling right along. The folks are tuning in, which we certainly appreciate, and you're doing a great job, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Pat. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. And so far, for those who are tuning in for the first time ever or for the first time this week, we've already looked at quarterback, running back, tight end, receiver. Today, we are going to tackle offensive line, and Chris, a lot to talk about, I'm sure, for offensive line.
Yep, sure is, Pat, especially if Eli's back next season. You know, we have to shore up that right side, no question about
Absolutely.
It. And, the line improved in the second half of the season, and it was no coincidence that Eli did too.
Yeah, exactly. It all starts up front in the pit. And Chris, let's go back to the start of the season for a moment here, because, you know, obviously, if we go back actually a year ago, Dave Gettleman, the general manager, stood before the media and he made no secret over what his intention was, what his top priority was. And that was, of course, to rebuild the offensive line, upgrade it, add some more talent, his hog mollies, as he called them. And
right.
He went about doing that. Now, we got the free agency. Andrew Norwell was reportedly a target. They weren't able to get him. They got Patrick Omame from Jacksonville, who interestingly lost his position to Andrew Norwell when they signed him. And they also looked to flip Eric Flowers from the left tackle spot to right tackle, plugging in Nate Solder there at left tackle. In retrospect, Chris, was it too ambitious of a goal for the Giants to expect Omame, who had been basically a career left guard, and Flowers, a career left tackle, to make the conversion over to the right side?
Yeah, especially Flowers, you know. I mean, they tried to make him with a right tackle, and, you know, they were rolling the dice, in my opinion, hoping it would work out, hoping the change of position would make him, you know, would improve his play, and a new offensive line coach and all that. And it didn't work out. Omame actually played better in Jacksonville last year. He came over here. He was not good at all. So I guess, Pat, to say, okay, we're going to have a real good offensive line with these two guys on the right side, very ambitious. It didn't work out. And Gettleman took care of his mistake by eliminating both of them.
Yeah, the thing with Eric Flowers, it always kind of, you know, put some doubt in my mind. You know, at times you saw him, you know, apply himself, but unfortunately, I just don't think it was as consistent as you would have liked to have seen it. And, you know, he went through, I think it was three offensive line coaches. None of them could really get through to him as far as, you know, getting him to play proper technique. And at the end there, it just seemed like, you know, well, actually, if we go back a little further, there was that whole incident where he didn't want to come and report for the start of the off-season training program. Gettleman, you know, when we asked him about it during the draft, he sounded irked about it, and which told me that Flowers was purposely staying away. So just a really weird tenure for a guy who was the number 9 overall pick, I think, in 2015, and is by far the biggest bust of recent years, I think, of the draft classes.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, when you miss out on a number 9 pick, especially at an important position like left tackle, in this case, you wound up at right tackle, but it sets the franchise back, Pat. When you miss on number 1 picks, it sets the franchise back. Flowers didn't want to take the coaching. That's the bottom line. All right, the kid didn't want to. You know, he didn't want to take anything. Him not showing up at OTAs with a new head coach, what does that tell you? All right, that just shows you his attitude. All right. And it's, you know, I'm just happy Gettleman, unlike Reese, Pat, unlike Reese, who continued to stick with the kid because he tried to make a point of, well, he's my number one pick, so I'm going to keep throwing him out there. Okay. Gettleman got rid of him. Okay. As far as Omame, Pat, you know, it was a free agent that didn't work out. So Gettleman, you know, moved on from him too. But Flowers was a total disaster. Did not like to take the coaching. Did not want to improve. All right. I guess he just wanted to collect a paycheck, Pat, and that's why he's no longer here.
Yeah, and the irony is he went down to Jacksonville to step in where he was reunited with Pat Flaherty, who was originally his offensive line coach here, and Tom mm-hmm. Coughlin, who, you know, the vice president of football operations down in Jacksonville. But I just thought that was kind of ironic that, you know, he ended up down there.
Yeah, you know, Flaherty's gone, right? They fired him after the season. It shows you how much Flowers, you know, how much he could get through the Flowers. So, you know, Flaherty's gone. They fired him. Coughlin took him in. You know, Coughlin was crazy about him when he drafted him that night. You know, he called him, what, a battleship or something? This kid's unbelievable, the whole deal. I guess maybe Coughlin thought, oh, well, he'll come over with us. He'll be fine. He'll work on his game and like that. How did that work out? The Jaguars get more sacks in the last four or five games with him playing left tackle than a whole year. So, the kid's a disaster. I'll be shocked if he stays in this league, Pat, beyond his rookie contract.
Which, of course, ends right now, actually. I think this
right.
is it, if I'm not
yeah,
mistaken.
Yeah, this is it for him.
But now, the other interesting decision that the Giants made on the offensive line was at center. A guy, and I'm going to be honest here, I did not see this coming, and, you know, it's not necessarily, I'm not trying to be disrespectful towards John Halapio, but if you had said to me who's going to be the starting center after they lost Weston Richburg in free agency, I would have gone with Brett Jones because, you know, Jones finished the previous year at center, did a good job. Now, was Jones the biggest guy, the most powerful guy? No. But he held his own there, and the offensive line, you know, the calls and everything, he didn't really miss a beat. So I was very surprised that they went with Halapio over Brett Jones, who they ultimately ended up trading.
Yeah, but Halapio is a stronger, better in Sherman felt he was better in the run game. Halapio played pretty good at the end of last season when he played right guard. They just liked his game more, Pat. And, you know, I actually had Halapio in the projection. I just thought that he was more of a fit for what Sherman wanted to do. It was a little bit of a surprise he won the job. Yeah, no question about it. You know, they didn't like Jones's game, obviously. He moved on from him, and he sent him over to Minnesota. And Halapio played pretty good at the end of last season at right guard, and he was pretty decent the first few games. I know it was only a small sample size, but played pretty decent. For the Giants beginning of the year, and I project him to be the starter next season, Pat, unless somebody beats him out.
Well, they're going to have to re-sign him. He is an exclusive rights free agent. I did speak with him during Baggy Day, or, you know, for those not familiar with the term, the last day when the Giants were packing up all their belongings. Halapio, who suffered the season-ending broken ankle, was doing fine. I mean, he's without the scooter now. Earlier in the year, he was walking around with a scooter, but he's walking fine. He says he told me he was ahead of schedule, very optimistic, said he would love to be back if the team will have him. Look, he's a good guy to have in the locker room. You know, you talk about the culture thing, and Halapio, you just won't find a better character guy for that yep. offensive line, a guy who cares, he puts in the time, he works his tail off. You know, you can make the argument, okay, maybe he's not the long-term answer. You know, maybe they dip into the draft and they get a young center. But, you know, Halapio, whatever he lacks for football-wise, he more than makes up for with determination. And sometimes, you know, it's those guys who aren't necessarily the most blessed in terms of athletic ability or whatever, who really compensate for it with their, you know, with their determination, their preparation, dotting their I's and crossing all their T's. And that's what I see in this guy.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, getting to know him, he's an excellent locker room guy. And I got to be honest with you, Pat, I expect the Giants to sign him, you know, to a 1 or 2 year, whatever it might be, contract and bring him back. And you're exactly right. You know, he's ahead of schedule. Told me he's going down to Tampa. The train and rehab and all that, and he fully expects to be back for, you know, the off-season program and all that. And I expect him back, Pat. I don't know about you, but I think the Giants bring him back.
I think so, too. You know, John Greco was the other alternate at center. You know, they brought him in when Jalapio went down. Actually, had been already on the roster, but he stepped in to replace Jalapio. Had some struggles there. Ultimately, they pulled him for Spencer Pulley, who was a guy they picked up after training camp. Spencer Pulley, not a bad job. You know, he's still kind of young, but I'm kind of curious to see if they bring him back as well, because if I'm not mistaken, he's either an exclusive rights to restricted free agent, because he's still
kind
of young, like I said. Yeah, so I think they'll probably tender him, bring back Jalapio. I don't think John Greco, who is a UFA, will be brought back. Good guy, but unfortunately, you know, just couldn't crack into the best five when they had to redo that offensive line, and especially a guard when they were having the struggles with Patrick Omame. They put him in there, I think, for a little bit, and then they got Jamon Brown, and, you know, they just – it took them, what, about four times before they got the offensive line, you know, right, I think?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, listen, Greco was a serviceable guy, but, you know, not a guy I envisioned coming back. What's his 10 years in the league now, whatever he is in, 11 years. He played all right. He was just, you know, okay. So I don't expect him back. Pulley's the restricted free agent. I could see him being back, no question, and I could see Jalapio. Pulley's a nice guy to have if something happens to Jalapio, right? He was serviceable. Pulley, not bad as a center. Played 16 games last year as a center for the Chargers. So is he a Pro Bowler? No, but, you know, he'll hold his own a little bit if needed again, like they needed him this year, you know? So that's the way I envision it, Pat. I see Jalapio back, and I see Pulley backing him up.
All right, sounds good. Chris, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about the offensive line. Loads to talk about. So, Giant fans, do stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants here with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Viziano of the Giant Insider. And we are breaking down each Giants position unit. We've done offense all this week, and right now we are in the midst of doing the offensive line, which, you know, as you can imagine, there's a lot to speak about with the offensive line. So, Chris, let's just continue our conversation about last year and how it kind of fell in together. Because, like I said before we took the break, there were four different versions of the offensive line before they finally got one that kind of worked all right. Right. And a big guy, you know, that came in and seemed to make a difference almost instantly was Jamon Brown, who they picked up, I think, over the bye week. The Rams had let him go, you know, a young guy, a big guy, stepped right in at right guard, and they basically didn't look back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a no-brainer, Pat. He was an upgrade over Patrick Omame. Stabilized the line a bit, played pretty well for the Giants. Not real well, but played good enough to, you know, get some progress going on that right side. And, you know, I think he stabilized Chad Real a lot, Pat. I think he communicated well with Chad. They seem to work well together because, you know, Omame and Wheeler, you know, after Flowers was benched, you know, Wheeler went in there. You know, Omame and Wheeler, it just didn't work well, you know, with the stunts, the twists and all that. Those issues went away when Jamon Brown was in there. I mean, So besides playing, you know, pretty decent right guard, I thought he helped with the communication with him, Pulley, and then when you have all that communication pattern on the right side, it goes through the whole line. You know, it goes all over to Will Hernandez and Nate Solder and all that. So I thought that was a big plus when Jamon came over, that he knew how, you know, this guy played. You know, he's got a lot of games on his belt over there in that right guard position. And I think he really, really helped communication wise and helped Wheeler improve his game, because, you know, Wheeler was, you know, listen, he was pretty decent the second half of the season too.
You know, and speaking of, you make a good point. You know, a lot of people, when they look at the playoff of an offensive lineman, they don't take into consideration the guy who's next to him, because, and it's so important. And let's look at the left side for a moment here. And Will Hernandez, a rookie, okay? Now, this is a kid who at UTEP really didn't play like top level competition like you would expect from some of the bigger programs. But he comes in, he's got Nate Solder, who's a 10-year veteran left tackle, and he's helping him. He's constantly, you know, in his ear, you know, talking to him, working with him to recognize stuff. And I don't know about you, but I thought Will Hernandez played very well, and a big part of that, and I think Will will admit to it as well, is that he had Nate Solder in his ear. And that was, you know, for all the people who were complaining about, oh, the Giants overspent on Nate Solder, well, you're going to do that in free agency anyhow, especially when you swing and miss on key positions. But I thought that that was a hidden value that Nate Solder brought to the team that not a lot of people are giving him credit for.
Yeah, no question about it. The valuable experience that Solder brings was immense for Will Hernandez. I mean, Will Hernandez talked about it all season. You talk to him in the locker room, you know, and all that. And the first thing that comes out of his mouth is how much Nate Solder helped him. To have a veteran like that, you know, listen, like you said, Pat, this is not an SEC kid coming out of college, okay? The competition wasn't top flight competition, what he saw in college. And he had to make a huge adjustment coming into this league. And Solder was so invaluable, man, in helping him. And recognizing, you know, recognizing defenses, what they're doing up front and all that, man, and who to block. You know, it's funny. You think like, oh, you're playing left guard. You know who to block every play. No, you don't. No, you don't. You know, it's you have to recognize certain things that defenses are doing up front. Solder really helped him with that. And, you know, Hernandez had a pretty solid rookie year, Pat, and he's only going to get better. Solder talked about, at the end of the year, about he didn't have to tell Hernandez what to do anymore. You know, we'll recognize everything. He was on his own, and it was just so big for the Giants to have a guy like Solder alongside him all season.
Yeah, absolutely. And Solder, as you mentioned, his play got better as the year went on. Now I'm looking at Pro Football Focus's stats. In terms of guys who gave up the most sacks, they have Solder's as being the team leader in that regard, 7. But, you know, the one thing that I'll say about these particular stats is you never really know who actually gave up the sack, because sometimes it might look like it's one guy when, in fact, that guy's trying to clean up for another guy. So I'm a little reluctant to put a whole lot of, you know, stock in this. But with that said, you know, if you look at overall, like, pressures and whatnot, Chad Wheeler, the right tackle, had the biggest amount. He had 45 by a landslide. He was the team leader. The kid battled. He really did, you know, and they liked his work ethic. And, you know, he's a good kid. He took the coaching well. But at some point, you got to say to yourself, okay, you got to upgrade at that spot. And the interesting thing about Chad Wheeler, if I'm not mistaken, he was a college left tackle, played there most of his career, if I'm not mistaken. So he's, you know, I'm not trying to make an excuse here, but I'm just wondering if he was still maybe adjusting to that right side.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. He was a left tackle at USC. You know, that was a new position to him, no question about it. Listen, Pat, the way I see Wheeler is this. I think he's earned the right, no question, to be the swing tackle off the bench next season. No question. You know, if something happens to Solder or something happens to who would he bring in a right tackle, he's a guy now you put in the lineup. You say, okay, a guy gets hurt, go off the bench. One of these guys get hurt. Wheeler goes in there, and you say to yourself, Pat, okay, I can live with it. I'm not terrified that Chad Wheeler's in the game, you know, because Eric Flowers terrified you, right? When you saw him out there, you was like, oh, my God. You know, every time you saw him, Wheeler improved the second half. But I feel that's a position that needs to be upgraded big time. I mean, he was serviceable, no question about it. I like him. If somebody gets injured, I have no problem coming in, either left tackle, right tackle, but I just don't want to see him as a starter. PFF had him rated pretty low, too, like 82nd or something rated tackle. It's a position that needs to be upgraded. But Wheeler has earned the right to be the first swing, you know, to be a swing tackle coming in next year if somebody gets injured.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, another thing they did that I think, I don't know how many people actually caught, but they put a lot more tight end help on that right side. They had to give him help because, as we know, you know, people say, well, it's all about matchups. But nowadays, defensive coordinators are constantly flipping their ends to get the most favorable, you know, matchups. And, you know, a lot of times Wheeler got some tough matchups. And like I said, he battled. You know, I had absolutely no problem with his level of compete. But, you know, I agree with you. I think they definitely have to look to upgrade that spot. But I have no problem with him, you know, competing for the swing tackle. I think he's going to compete for that role, as well as Brian Mihalik, who was the first tackle off the bench last year once they settled everything down. Brian Mihalik played that jumbo tight end and a handful of snaps and everything like that. I think he allowed something like 6 pressures, according to Pro Football Focus. But, you know, a work in progress, because Mihalik, too, is a guy I think they're converting from a defensive lineman to an offensive tackle.
Yeah, he was a defensive lineman. Yeah, right. So, I don't know, Pat, you know, I'm sure, you know, they're going to address this position in the draft and, you know, free agency after the draft, bringing some more guys in. Over at right guard, Pat, I don't know how you feel. I like to see an upgrade over Jamon Brown. But if they don't, and he is the starting right guard next season, if they do sign him, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I don't know how you feel on that.
Actually, Chris, hold that thought. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about that, because I do have a couple of thoughts I want to say about Jamon Brown. So, folks, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and come back.
Hey, Giant fans. NFL playoffs are here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Don't be the person with no rooting interest this year with Super Bowl 53 just around the corner. Make sure you're ready for the daily action by signing up at MyBookie today. They pay fast when you win, they're committed to excellent customer service, and they offer the craziest props. Remember, where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money during the postseason, you've got to go to MyBookie. Join now, and MyBookie will offer you a 50% deposit bonus when you use the promo code LOCKEDON in setting up your account. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Bizziano of the Giant Insider. And we are breaking down the 2018 season. We're doing it by position, and we are talking offensive line. And Chris, before the break, you brought up a point, actually, that I was going to ask you about, and that was about Jamon Brown, who the Giants acquired off of waivers from the Los Angeles Rams at the bye week. They plugged him into right guard. And they, they settled the line down with him there. You know, he started off well, tailed off a little bit at the end. Now,
yes,
I like Jamon Brown. I think he brought a positive attitude. I like the fact that he did what it was necessary to really, you know, bury his head in that playbook and get up to speed as quickly as possible. I think what concerned me as the second half of the year went on, he started to fade a little bit. And I'm not sure if that was because of an injury or what was going on exactly. But, you know, one of the observations at Inside Football we made on a frequent basis is that it just didn't seem that his power matched his size.
Yeah, I thought he struggled in pass protection a little bit towards the tail end of the season. And I struggled, you know, watching him on film, you know, he struggled a little bit in the run game too, you know. When he came over, he played really well, I thought, after the bye. I thought he played really well. I did not like the last few games watching him, you know, on film. I thought he was average at best, Pat. Now, don't get me wrong. That average at best was, you know, Zach Martin-like compared to what we had there with Patrick Omame. Okay? But I look at it, Pat, like, it's not the worst thing in the world if for some reason, you know, the position is not upgraded. But I would like to see the position upgraded, because I just thought he was average at best at the tail end of the year. He didn't grade out well in all the Pro Football Focus. So I don't know. It would be interesting to see if they sign him, Pat. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't. Did a nice job. Don't get me wrong. He's a good locker room guy, too. He's a real good kid. No, he's a real good kid. They liked him in the locker room, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's not back.
Actually, Chris, I'm going to disagree with you there. I think they will try to bring him back, because here's the thing. I mean, they need a I think we both agree they need to upgrade the entire right side of the line. Okay,
right.
They need to make a decision on center. So let's say, you know, Gettleman says, okay, look, I got to do 3/5 of that offensive line again. The question now becomes is, you know, unless they get really, really lucky, and this is a very, like, light class for tackles, from what I'm understanding,
yeah,
but a very
yeah.
rich class for centers and guards. So you say to yourself, okay, do I take a center, and then do I maybe add a free agent right tackle? I'm thinking Darrell Williams of Carolina is going to be like target number one, given the connection
mm-hmm.
Gettleman has. But then you also say to yourself, okay, well, maybe if I get Jamon Brown back, he can also play right tackle. So you say to yourself, okay, can I live with him another year while I just fix the interior of the line, which is where they had some problems at times? And you know, we mentioned Will Hernandez before. He's going to get better and better, and he showed that down the stretch. But sometimes you have to just say, if you're a GM, can I live with a guy? And I think Jamon Brown is a guy they can certainly live with if they have to another year.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Pat, like I said a little while ago, I wouldn't have a problem. I would like to see the position upgraded, Pat, but if he is the right guard next season, I wouldn't have a, you know, I wouldn't be like disastrous like Omami was. I wouldn't have a problem with it, you know. I can live with it, Pat, no question about it. I would like to see it upgraded, but, you know, if he comes back, I would not, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, Pat, over there. And you, like you said, you got a guy who could fill in if somebody gets hurt at right tackle, if it's on wheel or whatever it might be. So, good locker room guy. You know, I could definitely see, you know, I would not mind him coming back at all, Pat. Would not have a heart attack, put it that way, if Jamon's a right guard starting next September.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the key, though, with Jamon Brown, and this is something I think we all have to remember. When he was sent on waivers by the Rams, if I'm not mistaken, 5 teams put in a claim for him. So you got to wonder now, you got to say to yourself, okay, there's going to probably be a market for his services. And
right.
I just don't think the Giants are going to overspend to keep him. I think they're going to try and make him a fair enough offer. But if some team with more cap space and fewer needs comes sweeping in and offers him a ton of money, I don't know. You know, I think it could be tricky for them to re-sign him. I don't necessarily think he's a slam dunk to be back based on that factor alone.
Yeah, right. That's why I said that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not back, if they don't re-sign him. Not because they necessarily don't want him, because, you know, like you just said, Pat, if somebody comes in and gives him, you know, a certain number that's not what Gettleman's looking at, then guess what? They're going to let him walk. There's no question about it. They're not going to overpay for Jamon Brown. Okay, that isn't happening. So, listen, Pat, this is the way free agency works. You know, if a team comes in and says, you know what, we really like this guy, let's give him more, because you know, he might go back with the Giants. You know, he might resign. Then guess what? Gettleman's going to be like, okay, it's time to move on.
Yeah, and you know, it's just so interesting. There's so many variables, though. If I'm not mistaken, didn't Jamon Brown say, and I think it was in an article, I'm not sure where I saw it, but I thought I saw him say that he might consider giving the Giants a hometown discount. I mean, I got to tell you, Chris, when a player says, I'll consider giving a team a hometown discount, come on. I mean, I don't know that there's such a thing, because these mm-hmm. windows that the players have to play football is just so small. And I just
yeah.
I just don't know that guys really, you know, give hometown discounts as much as,
yeah.
you know, the media and the public perceives that to be the case, you know, because you got to optimize your earnings while you can.
Yeah, Pat, that's like, I call that exit interview talk. You know, it sounds good. You know, I'm really excited. I love the organization and all that. And I'm sure he does. As a matter of fact, I know he does. You know, he loved it here. But when it comes to numbers, you know, Pat, and, you know, when it comes to six-figure numbers or seven-figure numbers, it's a different story. Now, like you said, how long you play in this league? Not very long. You want to cash out while you could. It sounds great, but when it comes down to it in crunch time, as far as hometown discount, don't see it happening. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure I see it happening either. Chris, so let's get some final thoughts on the offensive line and the direction. You're Dave Gettleman. Tell me how you address what you see the biggest needs on that offensive line, draft, free agency, and if you have a name, throw them out.
Well, The big tackle coming out is Jonah Williams from Alabama. You'll see him tonight in the national championship game. It comes down to we have to find out what's going on with Eli, right? If they're moving on from Eli, then they might go with Haskins. I don't know how much they like him. Okay, so we'll throw that out. Let's throw that out right now and say they're coming back with Eli. Now Gettleman's going to go either, you know, defensive line or offensive line. So, listen, my number one or number two is definitely going to be offensive line. They go defense first pick. It has to be offensive line second pick. That's the way I would look at it as Gettleman. You know the way I feel? I've shifted the way I feel on this team. I feel they have to go defense edge first round, okay, and then offense second round, and a lot of all the offense in the middle round. You know, you could take two, a couple offensive linemen in this draft. That's the way I would go about it, Pat. I would go about it. My second pick would be somebody on the offensive line. Like you said, it's pretty deep in center and guard, something like that, and defense the first round. That's the way I would go about it. So very early in the draft, offensive line, very early in the draft.
I think early in the draft, it's possible if there was a guy there. You know, you mentioned, you know, see what Eli does. I think Eli is going to be back. I know we talked about quarterbacks on Monday. I think he will be back. You know, yes, there's that possibility he retires, but he just didn't sound like a guy willing to hang it up. And I know about the radio interview he did and how he sounded, you know, noncommittal. But I think there's going to be some additional, you know, conversations going on. And quite honestly, you got to remember all those earlier, you know, the press conference by Gettleman, you know, Eli's radio interview, emotions were still kind of raw. So, you know, you got to give people a time to get away, clear their head, give everything some thought, not make snap decisions. But with that said, one of the things, you know, people – you know, always comment about the offensive line that they're building today and tomorrow and next year and so forth. This is going to be the line ideally that they have for when they bring the next quarterback in, whoever that kid is or veteran is. So it's funny because people talk about, oh, the Giants built around Eli. They didn't necessarily build around Eli. They're trying to put together a solid foundation so that any quarterback can come in here and be successful, whether it's a veteran or a rookie. So I just don't buy that, you know, oh, they picked Nate Solder and Saquon Barkley exclusively for Eli. No, those guys can play for any quarterback. But, you know, regarding the offensive line, I would be very surprised if they go offensive tackle in the first round. I think even though it's a deep class for defensive guys and edge rushers, that was a huge problem this year. I mean, I think we can both agree that the lack of a pass rush was a big, big problem. They can do things on the offensive line. They can do things on the offensive line with, you know, playing more 12 personnel, which they did in the second half of the year, to kind of cover up for some of that stuff. So even if they get, you know, a marginal player, and I'm not, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they shouldn't upgrade. I think they absolutely should if they can, but I think if given the druthers, you go defense and you don't look back. And I'm not backing off of that statement until such time when I have additional information or new information that's going to send me in a different direction.
Listen, Pat, you were there at Gettleman's presser, you know, right next to me, and you read between the lines. Why? You know, what I comprehended at a gentleman's presser was that he's going after defense. All right? He's going after defense. So I think he's going to address it in free agency. You know, either be Darrell Williams or I don't even have the list in front of me yet as far as free agents, but I think he'll address the tackle position in free agency, and I think he's drafting defense in the first round. I'm going to stick with that until something, you know, tells me something, somebody tells me different, or I see something different. That's the way I think Edelman's going to go.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it makes sense. You know, you get a tackle in free agency. If you can get Darrell Williams, he's coming off of an injury, if I'm not mistaken. I think a knee injury.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe you're able to get him at an affordable rate, you know, and then you can pour the rest of the money. You know, you got to get a receiver. We talked about that earlier in the week. And then you've got to focus on that defense. That defense needs a lot of pieces. James Betcher, you know, people are questioning, you know, just how good James Betcher is. I will go to my grave saying that he did not have everything he needed in order to run the defense he wanted to run in his first season with the Giants.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. No question about it. We have to answer. You know, what Betcher does, you know, his system and all that, we got to get some edge guys, you know what I mean, that get the quarterback. And I really believe if you could get one edge guy that, you know, could get your double digits, 10-sack guy or something like that, and then you got the young kid, Lorenzo Carter and all that, I think they'll be all right. So, you listen, Gettleman seemed like he was pretty pissed about the second half of the season. You look at them at that presser, and he was like, you know, he wasn't happy. You know, he felt like everybody else felt. The defense was the reason why they lost a lot of games in the second half. And I really believe that's where he's going to go in this draft.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Chris, on that note, we will wrap up our review of the offense and the offensive line. It's been a very, I don't know about you, but this week, these chats we've had, this breakdown, really informative, you know, learning from each other, you know, throwing some ideas out. And hopefully the readers, hopefully the listeners out there have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, I hope so. It's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. It is, even though the season's over and it's a downer and all that, but it is, you know, it is a fascinating time of year as far as free agency and a draft coming up and all that.
And there'll be plenty more to talk about. Giant fans, we appreciate you listening. Don't forget to tune in next week. Chris and I are going to break down the defensive side of the ball. And we're going to have a lot to talk about there for sure. If you thought this conversation was lengthy, we're just getting started. So on that note, I want to thank Chris for coming on. You can find him on Twitter at Giant Insider. You can, there's a link in the bio where you can subscribe to their paper. They also have their own podcast with Jerry Foley, the senior editor. And it's definitely worth a listen. I know I tune in every so often when time permits, and you guys do a great job. You keep it up.
Well, thank you, Pat. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
Yes, we will. All right, Giant fans, thanks for listening. Patricia Traynor signing off. Thank you.